From NPR News, it's All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Michelle Norris. 60 years ago today, a booklet began arriving on the desks of U.S. media executives called Red Channels. It was an expose of a communist fifth column in American TV and radio. It named scores of actors, journalists, writers, and directors, all of whom it alleged had aided the communist cause. The result was soon an upheaval that rocked American broadcasting and the lives of many who made their living in it. Independent producer John McDonough tells us about one of them.
Red Channels arrived quietly and discreetly. No headlines, no TV coverage. There seemed to be something a little dirty about it from the start. Some executives wouldn't even admit to having seen a copy. But Red Channels was soon the most public secret in the industry. Among the prominent names it listed were Orson Welles, Leonard Bernstein, Arthur Miller, Lena Horne, Edward R. Murrow, and Artie Shaw. Its vigilante crusade was serious business. An example. Early in 1951, George Burns introduced a new cast member on the Burns and Allen Show.
From now on, Harry Morton will be played by John Brown.
But John Brown had been listed in Red Channels. The applause lasted 6 months, then he was dropped. There were a lot of stories like that. Here's another.
Three different networks had offered me an ongoing show of my own on television.
That's actress Marcia Hunt. 1950 looked like a banner year for her. Then in July, her agent called with some strange news.
I was waiting to hear from the three networks, and I never did. And my agent explained this with two words, which I had never heard before, Red Channels. And that anyone so listed in that accusatory, privately published pamphlet was just not welcome on the air anymore.
As her agent described the new order, Hunt found it almost too bizarre to be true.
My reaction to hearing of something called Red Channels was disbelief at first. And then, though I never would have a copy of it in the house, the citations, the six items listed beside my name were read to me over the phone. And yes, indeed, I had been there, I had done that, I had said this or signed something, all of them things I believed in, and was amazed to discover they were considered subversive in some way.
Operating out of a small office on West 52nd Street, Red Channels projected an influence that affected hiring decisions at the networks, the ad agencies, and some of the largest advertisers in the country. It was all done quietly, behind closed doors at first. The public was still largely unaware of Red Channels until it caught the spotlight with the Gene Muir case in August.
And now the Jell-O family presents the Aldrich family.
Henry! Henry Aldrich!
Coming, Mother.
That summer, NBC cast actress Muir in the Aldrich family. Muir's name had already appeared in Red Channels, but no one considered that important. Yeah, only when the sponsor began receiving protest letters did anyone take another look. In August, Muir was replaced before the first program aired. Unlike John Brown or Marcia Hunt, the Muir case was widely reported, along with the role played by Red Channels. The squalor of it all was embarrassing to the networks and to advertisers. They decided they wanted distance and deniability. Some thought it might break the blacklist. Instead, it merely drove the process even deeper behind closed doors.
There was no procedure set up to try to clear your name. I did, on my own volition, write a letter to each of the three major networks explaining that I cared nothing about communism and had done my best to be a good citizen in the war effort during World War II, and I hope this would clear any confusion and that I would be permitted to resume work. I never had any kind of response to that.
Authorities were not interested in letters. They preferred a mix of humiliation and atonement.
You had to repent and to swear lifelong hatred and opposition to the Communist Party.
The decline of the blacklist was slow but steady by the late 1950s until it was largely broken by a lawsuit in 1962. Today, Marcia Hunt is 92, still active, and in a small way still a victim of the blacklist period. She finds that a little puzzling.
And I must tell you, the interest in the blacklist era never seems to die down. I'm constantly asked about it. And the one real regret I have is that I may be remembered for having been blacklisted rather than for the work that I have done as an actor.
For NPR News, this is John McDonough.